Right now it is time for our conversation, the Berkshire Edge on Air, and that's the berkshireedge.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they are there, and they are putting out information, South County, Massachusetts, and surrounding areas. Everything dealing from moment-to-moment news, town meetings, music, sports, you name it, they have it there at the berkshireedge.com. And it's time to welcome in both Marcy and David once again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you guys have made national news, almost the lead story across the case, and that is because in your primary up there, Kennedy lost an election.
Can you imagine? I know.
Well, I kind of saw this coming when you had even the progressive, not only the liberal wing of the party, but the progressive wing of the party supporting Markey. It did not bode well for Kennedy, who was trying to run as a progressive against a guy who's been in office a long time, but who has fairly impressive progressive credentials.
Yeah, I mean, he's partnered with AOC to introduce the Green New Deal, and she supported Markey, which is a big surprise.
And he had support of Elizabeth Warren, so he had support of both sides, really, of the Democratic Party.
And he came here, and Joe Kennedy came here too, and he went to West Stockbridge. Markey came and spoke at had a rally in Great Barrington. I think the problem was that nobody saw any reason to dump Markey for Joe Kennedy except for the name. And he didn't run as heavily on his name for most of the campaign as, he did at the very last minute when he thought he was losing. But I think what's happened is that there's a generation of people who don't feel the same way about the Kennedys. He assumed that the younger generation would be for him. But according to the analysis, they don't have the same attachment to the Kennedys that that older people have, and older people were happy with Markey.
Well, let's give Markey some credit, though, because he is a savvy politician, and
he is.
And by tying himself with AOC and the Green New Deal, any young people that support AOC, when she labeled that endorsement, we're going to support him. They're just that way. So not only has he been a good representative for Massachusetts over the years, but a savvy politician. And I know if you're a Kennedy, you're expected to be, but you don't run against somebody who's been so successful. And you know what? Markey did not rest on any of his laurels.
No, he worked hard.
Yeah. So I mean,
he worked hard on this campaign.
Now let's go to the district one incumbent, Richie Neal.
Yeah. Well, David knows more about.
Well, no, Richie was facing a particular, challenge from Alex Morris, who is the mayor of Holyoke, but it was a young guy, challenging Neal, and it was an interesting race. The problem was that Alex Morse had some issues, I guess, that people might have
turned people off.
I mean, he was openly gay, and that might have been something that people just turned away from. I mean, he was a dynamic guy, but still, again, this was a case of another case of where the elderly statesman, the incumbent, pushed back a challenge from a younger generation.
Well, the other thing is that Richie Neal is head of the House Ways and Means Committee, so he's very senior. I think that was the question on people's minds. Why dump him for somebody whose qualifications were not that stellar?
Well, that's, you know, just you point something up. Both of them have a lot of experience in shepherding things for their local districts through through politics.
That seniority really counts.
It really does. And especially if you can mix that seniority with endorsements from a progressive wing and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's an amazing how a long-term incumbent, if they stay on their game and they don't let themselves just sit there and rest on their laurels, if they keep working, they can keep getting reelected.
Well, you know, the problem in Massachusetts is that we have some very popular elected officials. I mean, we have, Markey and Elizabeth Warren and Richie Neal, and there's no place for a young Democrat to go. I mean, these are, you know, you can't, it's hard to challenge these people. They're very, they're very secure in their positions, as we saw yesterday. And if you're a young Democrat, and you know, where do you go? You have to wait till one of them leaves.
Well, that's the whole thing. Yeah, if they're doing their job, and a majority of Democrats support them, you just got to bide your time, and hope that you can run for that position at the right time. It's just. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of patience, and patience isn't really a word that's used in politics.
No.
In Kennedy's case, this is the first time a Kennedy had ever lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel bad for him.
Well,
yeah.
You know what? These things happen, and you know what? The sun came up. The sun will come up the next day.
Oh,
and,
yes, right. And it certainly doesn't change my life.
And you know what? He's still going to be a Kennedy, and he's not going to change his life.
Yeah, he's good-looking young man.
Yeah, he's got
but,
a future.
I think the next opportunity will come if Elizabeth Warren leaves her position to become a member of the Biden government.
Yeah.
You know, which everybody says she might be.
So it'll
I
be.
Don't know, it, I don't know that she wants to stop being a senator to be a.
That assumes that Biden wins too.
That assumes that Biden wins, of course. And we can't assume that either. But that, I mean, that is looking forward. I mean, if Biden wins and he chooses Warren, then that's the first opportunity for for a young Democrat. But on the other hand, we have a Republican governor who may very well choose a Republican to be in the Senate, to succeed Warren.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he'll decide to succeed her himself.
Well, it's possible, right?
That's the great thing about politics. Everything's on the table, and there's a lot under the table that we don't know about.
Yeah,
that's true. It's not restricted.
A lot under the table. Yeah. Most is under the table.
That's exactly right.
But
I want to go on to the next story. We'll get away from that a little bit. That is the Black Lives Matter movement in the nation. What is going on with the racial discourse or no discourse at all? The Berkshire Hills Regional School District is once again considering naming one of their three schools after W.E.B. Du Bois. And how is that going along?
Well, we'll see.
It won't go well.
It won't go well because... they've tried this before, Du Bois seems to be a figure that, while he's a renowned scholar and founder really of the NAACP and other and with other seminal works on the lives of Black people in the United States, still his history of having at one point in his life when he was very discouraged with the prospects of ever achieving some kind of racial equity in this country had left, deserted the United States and moved to Africa, but that did not go over. With people too well, and they bring up this history despite his remarkable scholarly work and writings, which were very inspiring, and despite the fact, of course, that he was born in Great Barrington,
and he was a great environmentalist before his
time.
Yeah, he was. He gave a wonderful speech at Monument Mountain High School about the need to.
No, it wasn't at Monument Mountain. It wasn't built.
It was at
Searles High School,
right.
where the high school. It's now it was an elementary school. It's now not a school at all, but he gave this brilliant speech about the need to honor the character and of the Housatonic River, which at the time was being polluted by paper mill and companies, which were dumping all kinds of dyes into the river, and he was saying that, you know, that we're despoiling one of the really wonderful environmental characteristics of our community. So he was an early environmentalist. That's true.
So
quite a remarkable man.
Well, yeah. We'll see. I mean, you know, the last time, I don't remember what year, David may know, but last time we had a, this was proposed, there were really bitter arguments.
It'll happen again.
It'll happen again.
There's no doubt about it. Bitterness doesn't fade in years. It takes generations. Even then, it doesn't necessarily go away completely.
Right.
It's just one of those things. Now, we're talking about the schools, though. This is a pretty interesting story, and that is a plan to offer educational enrichment during the pandemic, and schools are closed for in-class sessions. They've teamed up with nonprofits to put programs together.
Yes, they have this. They have a kind of they call it a club,
a kids club,
a kids club. But they've teamed up with a number of nonprofits in the area, like Flying Cloud Institute and the regional community center and Green Agers and Volunteers in Medicine and Flying Deer, and they're trying to make a program that they call it Community Learning in the Berkshires. And what it is hopefully allowing parents to do is to have some kind of educational programming going on during this pandemic. And it allows the parents to have some freedom, you might say, when their kids are unable to go to school. But these kids can be occupied with some educational programming that will allow the parents to continue to go to their jobs rather than just stay at home.
Yeah, so this is very exciting. I mean, and you know, also
it's innovative, you know.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, we are also in an area where there's much discussion about schools merging. So, in a way, I mean, this is interesting that we have, both school districts participating in this. And they, you know, they're both transitioning to a so-called hybrid model.
They're basically starting off in Massachusetts with remote learning, and you're going to then move forward and start to go to that hybrid model?
Yeah.
On September 14th. They're starting on September 14th with a fully remote program, and then on Monday, September 28th, they're transitioning to a so-called hybrid model in which half the student population will be engaged in face-to-face learning on campus on different days. I mean, some on Mondays and Tuesdays, and others on Thursdays and Fridays.
Yeah,
nobody's going to be there on Wednesday, so the custodial staff can do a deep cleaning of the buildings every week.
Region 1 is opening up with that hybrid model in place, and, you know, we've spoken with the Region 1 superintendent, Lisa Carter, numerous times, and, you know, they spent all summer putting protocols in place in case things happened, and the day before yesterday, a teacher at Cornwall Consolidated School notified that she was infected with COVID. And they put all the protocols in place, and no big deal. They caught it early. They found three other teachers that have to also stay at home, but they're still getting set to open. So,
and they will be opening. Now, I believe, though, also that for example, Salisbury Central, that's full-time. That's not hybrid.
The grammar schools are all going back full time. It's only the high school that's going back as a hybrid. But as the superintendent said, anything with state mandates and with national mandates can change in a second. So no matter how much work that that's been laid out and planned, and how many things they have set, parents, educators, and students and grandparents should expect that there's going to be some things that happen that obviously are going to change the course of things, and just be prepared for the unexpected.
And be willing to be flexible. What was so wonderful in this case is that, hey, it worked. You put in a system and it worked. How often does that happen? It's just kudos to everybody who set it up.
So many people pulled together to work on these protocols, which
good
is
practice.
Doesn't happen often that.
I don't think the
community really coalesces around a project, and it's actually remarkable, and it shows what we can do.
Well, it's also a good example.
You find something that people more or less agree on.
The kids will be actually going to the venues, so the participating organization venues, so that they are not going to be home. They're going to be going to the Green Agers Center in Egremont, and they're going to the Flying Cloud. But what's good about it is that they are smaller numbers, not like the whole class. Some people will be in school, other kids will be going to these venues, so they can go in smaller numbers and keep their distances.
So that's also,
they can go and learn something interesting and be safe.
It's interesting to look at the pandemic in the way education is handling it. But, the Sharon Playhouse this weekend continues on. They offer these drive-through productions. They have one coming up on Saturday called The Perfect Fit. They have room for 52 vehicles. But they've teamed up with the Millerton Movie House, which is great because the movie house, probably more than any other business in our area, has been affected and devastated by not being able to be open. But at the Playhouse, there's going to be the drive-in movie theater for Jaws.
We wrote an article. We have Nat Benchley, who is the brother of Peter Benchley, who wrote the original book, Jaws. Nat Benchley lives in northwestern Connecticut.
Lives in Sharon.
And he wrote us a really interesting article about Jaws. He is going to host that that benefit, and the Millerton benefit at the Sharon Playhouse. So we have an article about it, and we also have a link to the ticket line.
Yeah,
wants to find it on the Edge.
The Playhouse has done a good job in working with actors and also now the movie house to bring people through this. And they don't make there's not a lot of money made on these events.
No, they're not making money at all. None of these places are.
But they're staying. It keeps the community in touch, and it keeps your mind off things, and I just think they've done a great job. And now this weekend you got the double header with Jaws on Sunday, and before that the show which is called The Perfect Fit. So they're doing a great job, as are some of the entertainment venues in South County as well.
They have to.
We've had drive-in movies all summer too, by the Mahawi and the Berkshire International Film Festival. So I'm not alone, but everyone is wondering what's going to happen when the weather starts to get cold, because everybody has been so innovative during the summer, and restaurants have been doing fairly well. They're not doing their normal business, but there are a lot of people here, and as a result, there have been a lot of people who've patronized restaurants, but they've been eating outside, and now I don't know what's going to happen.
Have they stayed well?
Yes, they've stayed well.
So that is something to factor in.
What they'll do, the restaurants will go down to like 50% capacity
and things like that.
Inside and stuff like that. It's once again, it'll take some adjusting for the public and for the restaurants. But everybody will work as hard as they can. But at least these businesses have a chance. The movie theaters in this country are just devastated because there's just not much they can do. And that's why they need all the help that they can get. I want to go on to your next story because it's interesting. And it was a Seiji Ozawa Day.
The Boston Mayor, Marty Walsh, declared September 1, yesterday, to be Seiji Ozawa Day in honor of that the longtime conductor of the Boston Symphony. He was a real favorite at Tanglewood when he was the music director of the Boston Symphony, and it was a real honor to. I thought that was you don't get that too often for a classical music star, you know. And so Seiji was honored by, you know, everybody loved him. The orchestra loved him, and the audience loved him. He was a really engaging, you know.
Seiji Ozawa and Yo Ma have this personality where everybody loves them. They may not know what they do, but they love them. It's true. They just have that personality.
Yeah, there's something about them that... I think they're available to the audience too. You know, I know that, for example, after the Tanglewood concerts, you can wait around at the outside the dressing rooms at Tanglewood, and greet the musicians as they come out after a concert. And Seiji was just wonderful there. He was greeting. I know my son plays cello. Waited there to greet to
Yo-Yo
say
Ma.
Hello
Yo-Yo Ma
to greet Yo-Yo Ma, not Seiji, Yo-Yo Ma,
but Seiji used to do that too.
Yeah, I mean they all so there's something about them that was really great for classical music, that's for sure.
All right, we only have about 40 seconds left. I want to get this next thing in about the GB Labs.
Oh yeah, we have an interesting story about a guy who's created a resource for a program for an online program for exploring the natural environment around Great Barrington, and so he's put together his name is Joe Grockmall, and he's put together 8 destinations, and he's a guide to, in an effort to make sure that people retain the kind of identity with this local community, and it's a really interesting project too. That maybe would not have happened had it not been for the pandemic that is, closeted people, and so.
And that was his own experience. I mean, he's been in the area for 20 years, but he said it wasn't until the middle of this pandemic that he challenged himself to explore 8 of Great Barrington's parks and landscapes all in one day.
And you can find out what he's talking about at theberkshireedge.com, okay?
Right.
Theberkshireedge.com. Guys, we're out of time. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on air here on Robinhood Radio. Once again, you'll find them at theberkshireedge.com.